It's easy to get lost in theoretical debates about religion and atheism. So here's a story about the very real impact of Buddhist meditation. Whether it's a story about religion, you can be the judge. Donaldson Correctional Facility is a maximum security prison in Alabama that holds 1,500 of the state's most dangerous criminals. Many are on death row. A few years ago, several Buddhist teachers came into the prison to lead a meditation class for inmates. And not just any kind of meditation, but Vipassana, a grueling course of silent meditation that lasted 10 days.
Each time we start a group sitting, we'll start off with chanting. The chanting is to help create and to preserve a good environment for you to work in.
Being someone as talkative as much as I am, shutting up for 10 days is just critical mass. You know, that's serious. That's almost to drive you into hysteria by itself.
36 prison inmates studied meditation. For some, their lives were never to be the same again. The story is told in the documentary film The Dhamma Brothers. Anne Strainchamps asked the film's director, Jenny Phillips, to describe Vipassana meditation.
You practice focusing on the breath, focusing the mind over a period of days, actually, and then you follow the sensations in the body, and you're at that point deeply internally focused after many, many hours of meditation. And as you sort of run your awareness through different parts of the body, things come to the surface that have been kept out of your conscious awareness for many, many, many years. And I guess you could call it the subconscious mind. And as they come to the surface, you're able to focus on them in an objective way without reacting to them. Then prisoners are the most reactive of all populations. You know, they're often not aware of their emotions, and they often don't know how to handle their emotions. They often have traumatic past histories. So teaching them this meditation technique really allows them to focus and concentrate and become aware of their emotions, and then to look at things as they come to the surface.
I knew that I had to kind of let things go. And I realized that I was holding onto things too strongly. And that became very funny. You know, I started laughing about the way I was reacting to everything. I started laughing because I was angry. And in the midst of the laughter, it changed to tears. I was like, whoa, man, the big image, you know, you're not supposed to cry. What if somebody sees you crying? It turned out that it was okay, actually. And I just didn't care anymore. And I just let the tears roll, and I cried. I don't know what I was crying about, but it felt good to cry. You know, it had been quite some time.
Some of the prison guards were pretty skeptical about the program. I mean, they thought the prisoners were just getting an excuse to escape from daily prison life for 10 days. But in fact, some of the prisoners who took part in the program said it was harder than prison, maybe the hardest thing they'd ever done.
It was horrible. It was probably the worst experience I've ever been through. I spent 8.5 years on death row, and this was harder. All the stuff that's buried down deep, they come up gradually. And most of them are small things, and you can deal with them, you recognize them, you look at it, and you move on. But I never felt any like that, that fifth day. It was hard to keep composure, stay on the mat. I wanted to jump and run bad. I've always justified some of my behavior during that crime. And on day 5, I just couldn't get away from myself. I had to actually see it. Things don't just happen, and your behavior causes the actions that you get into. So I am guilty.
You know, I think often we run away from our problems. We don't want to face them. We certainly do that in the so-called free world. Imagine if you're in prison and you have a past history that you're frightened of looking at. You have crimes that were inflicted upon you and, of course, crimes that you inflicted upon others. And in the distracting world of prison, you're able to avoid looking at that. And you want to look at it. You want to look at your crimes. You're looking for redemption, but you're terrified to do it.
I've been locked up 16 years, 8.5 years on death row in that 5-8 cell. And every morning I'd have to get up and live with the fact that I have isolated myself from everybody that I loved, isolated everybody I loved from me, and pretty much wrecked their lives. I had small children. They had to grow up in this community where their father has done this horrific act. You know, they had to go to school with kids that your father is a murderer. I thought I had a real good life going, and I blew it.
Some of the prisoners encountered things that they'd never allowed themselves to look at before. They found themselves shaking and sweating and weeping, and some of them tried to run and get out of the door. You know, the door was locked, and they tried to run down the hallway, but they couldn't. But they were always comforted and nurtured and reassured that this was what they needed to do. The truth shall set you free. And I think they found that by facing their truths, they were able to find some kind of sense of inner peace, some more than others.
What did the guys say themselves about the experience?
They've said many things. I've received over 200 letters from them. They've given me all kinds of stories about how, you know, when they would be ready to fight before, or somebody would say something insulting to them and anger would mount up, they were able to focus on their breath. They were able to observe themselves, because really, I think that's probably the most powerful thing that one takes away from learning to meditate, is you're not just your anger. You're also knowing, I'm angry right now. And it gives you a choice of how to react. So there are many stories of moments in which they previously would have gotten into fights. They would have ended up being sent into a segregation cell. They've been able to just breathe, relax, and move on.
I had to go tell these gang members, you go ahead and go your way, and I'm going to go my way. And hoping I don't catch any repercussions behind that. This how I knew if a possum work. When they call me a chump, call me a negative word, breathe a little bit, and I was cool.
There's another story you tell in the film. It says a prisoner, Grady, one of the inmates you followed from the beginning, who says that while he was in prison, he learned that his adult daughter had been murdered, and that thanks to all the meditation training, he feels that he is able to feel compassion for her murderer, which is an extraordinary thing.
Yeah. Grady is a very sad case of, and we show some of his childhood history in the film, that he was abandoned as a child out in a deserted house in the countryside with his little brother, Danny, and his mother dressed them up in their best clothes and took them out to the end of a long driveway to an abandoned house, stood them on the porch and told them not to move and to stay there, and she would be back. And she never returned. And he managed to keep his little brother alive and survive on whatever he could. He found a dead bird and a hubcap filled with water, and they survived for about 3 days. Danny later died, and Grady always felt responsible for the death of his little brother, and he had a very rough childhood, and later on witnessed a very violent crime in which he stood by while somebody was killed and left with the murderers, had never raised a hand to this person that was murdered, and unfortunately ended up on death row. And he struggled with so much over the years and went through the Vipassana course and found that meditation has been extremely helpful to him. And after the course, yes, he was watching television one day, and on the television set, he heard about the death of his daughter, Brandy.
She had been murdered. My first reaction was, boy, if I could just get my hands on this cat. But that only lasted a few minutes. And it's like, what are you talking about, Grady? I can't feel that way. I don't like anything that he did. It makes me physically ill to think about what my daughter went through. But I gotta still love the guy. He's still a human, just like the rest of us. I don't like what he did. I hope he can't ever do that to nobody else ever again. But he's a human being.
I'm curious, what do you say to the people, and I'm sure there are many, who say to you, men like this don't deserve nurturing or kindness? They committed terrible crimes against other people, and they're in prison to be punished.
Well, yeah, I do get asked that question a lot. And, you know, even if you only want to look at protecting officers who work in prisons and helping prisons be a more peaceful, healthy environment, and protecting our streets when 97% of the over 2 million people that are incarcerated today in the United States return to those streets. If nothing else, I think there's a strong public safety argument. You know, I also have to admit, I do believe that prisoners are human beings and that let's let them move on beyond their crimes. Let's let them look at their crimes, take responsibility for their crimes, be imbued with a sense of healthy guilt, not unhealthy guilt. Unhealthy guilt, I think, erodes self-esteem and makes people more capable of acting out and becoming violent. But healthy guilt, which means taking responsibility and understanding how you came to be where you were that day that you did those things that brought you to prison.
Jenny Phillips directed the documentary film The Dahmer Brothers. She spoke with Anne Strangechamps.